Enrollment in Florida's traditional public schools is declining, in part due to the state's school choice voucher program. And dwindling funds is an ever-present issue. Gina Jordan is joined by WFSU's Director of Content and former education reporter, Lynn Hatter, to break down the trouble facing school leaders locally and in districts statewide.
Hey, Lynn, welcome back to the newsroom.
Hi, G. Long time no see.
Yes. So did you see that opinion column in the Tallahassee Democrat by Alva Smith this month?
Sure did. You know, Alva is a longtime Leon County School Board member, and she's got some concerns and some ideas about how to deal with this ongoing and growing school funding issue.
Yes. So she wrote about changes that she says need to happen now in the Leon school system as enrollment keeps creeping downward.
There's also the issues of low pay for teachers and staff. The district's operational reserves are down to the minimum allowable amount required by state law.
Yep. She's calling for drastic changes. And she wrote that the district's operational costs must come down, and at least some of those savings should go toward employee and teacher raises.
You know, this is a growing concern. And Smith is also acknowledging here that this is a necessary pivot with the state school choice program, which has resulted in less overall funding for traditional public schools. And the way that school choice works is that the money follows the student. And because that money used to go to traditional schools, when students leave those institutions, that money goes with them wherever they go. Yeah. So it now is going to private schools. It's going to public charter schools, which aren't run by the district. And it's also being used for people who choose to homeschool.
Yeah. And she brought up the prospect of Leon County possibly having to close some schools, which is something Superintendent Rocky Hanna has said may need to happen.
And it's interesting that we're coming to this point now because that is a pain point for this district. It is not a new thing for Leon County. Smith pointed out during a recent meeting that the district has closed three schools in the last 20 years. And every single time, Gina, it's been really contentious.
Yeah, here's what she said at that meeting.
And I thought, okay, well, wait a minute. What schools have we built and what schools have we closed? Well, we built in this time period, just about starting in 99, we added Canopy Oaks, Montford, Roberts. We added three schools. Well, we also closed Carolyn, Brevard, Wesson, Bellevue. Okay, so there's been kind of an equal, you know, kind of an equal open and closure in the past 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, and that's because where people are choosing to move to determines where new schools are being built. So
right.
When you have an area of high growth, it's likely you're going to get a new school there. Whereas if you have an area where people are leaving, you're probably going to lose a school. So for example, Bellevue Middle was the last to close in 2010, and that was due to budget cuts and the school being under-enrolled. Brevard Elementary closed in 2007 for the same issue, and Weston Elementary was also closed in 2007 for a bunch of different reasons, including low academic performance and the need to consolidate. And those schools were located on the south and west sides in predominantly Black neighborhoods.
Right. So Smith's column was published, and then the school board met to discuss the agenda for the next day's school board meeting. Smith brought lots of handouts full of data, and she laid out her reasoning for that column she wrote.
And salaries were a big part of that.
So you can see these are ranked high to low in 2015-16. I'd just been on the board a year. We were, you know, somewhere a little lower than middle with an average teacher salary of $45,000. This past year, 23-24, we've lost ground. We have not kept up at the rate of other districts. We can see now Monroe County, I don't even talk about it because the cost of living is so unbelievable down there. They're up around $70,000. But we're not keeping up with giving our teachers what they need. And again, this is not finger pointing. This is us addressing this as a district.
And Lynn, we know that while the district offered teachers a raise that came out to about $40 a month, members of the Leon Classroom Teachers Association voted to reject that as not being sufficient. So the district got $1 million from the state to boost teacher wages, and that amount resulted in that $40 a month suggested increase.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of other things we can talk to about how that state allocation works. But it's not as easy as just saying you get a raise, and you get a raise.
Yeah.
So Smith went on to explain that enrollment numbers in the district have hovered around the 32,000 mark for the last 15 years, but there are a couple of charter schools that have grown significantly, and those are the Tallahassee School of Math and Science and both campuses of the School in Arts and Sciences. So if you take away the enrollment of those schools, the overall district enrollment is very much down.
So these independently run and very popular charter schools are getting the per pupil spending that would have gone to the district, as traditional schools are slowly seeing a reduction in students.
Yes. And then when you also add in the private schools that are now accepting vouchers, and also people who are choosing to homeschool, if all of those students were enrolled in a traditional public school, then the district would have a lot more money. But they're not, and the district does not get that funding.
Right. So now we have, according to Smith, a dozen of the district's 51 schools that are operating below capacity. And here's where the state's Schools of Hope program gets really interesting. So this program allows high-performing charter school companies to operate in areas that have low-performing schools. The state is taking that a step further to include those schools that are not at capacity. And Smith says there are six approved Schools of Hope providers that have started sending letters to districts.
Last week, over 18, I think it was 18 districts, got over 100 letters requesting to co-locate. So the legislature has now said, if you have capacity in your school, they haven't defined capacity yet, but we fully anticipate that's probably coming this session. If you have capacity in some of your schools, which we can look at our little grid here and see that we have a lot of schools with capacity, one of these schools, one of the Schools of Hope, can request to co-locate in your district with that school, and you must accept them. They also don't pay rent. So over 100 of these letters went out across the state, not to our district. We were not one of them yet. And this didn't even include Miami. So apparently Miami's letters, I think, are yet to come, or they didn't come from this one. But as the deadline of, I think, the opening day of November 11th rolls around, I think we're going to see more. So as we look at our undercapacity schools and the fact of possible consolidation, we have two choices. We can talk about it, and this is, I know it's a difficult conversation. I know it is. But we can talk about it, and we can decide on our own terms what goes on with our schools, or the state can decide for us. That's basically what we're looking at. So we've got two different conversations filtering into the operational efficiency. We've got, if we consolidate, if we do the things that we need to do to address the undercapacity in our schools, reimagine our schools to all kinds of additional purposes. We heard great conversation this week about workforce development housing in some of the old school locations. We heard about workforce training programs. We heard about pre-K programs. We heard all kinds of things that districts around the state are doing to really reimagine those facilities. But then we also have the possibility of the state swooping in and taking them over, or basically telling us we have to co-locate.
And that is a lot to process for this school board. And it's important to note that Leon County Schools has historically been opposed to charter schools. So whatever they do is likely to bring a lot of pushback.
Right. No doubt. So we wanted to hear what Tallahassee residents think about all this. And we sent our intern, Brooke Miotti, to Cascades Park. She found Claudette Farmer, who weighed in about the potential for schools to be closed in Leon.
What that does is it places kids now in a position where they're going to have to be bused to a site, meaning they're going to have to wake up earlier. They're going to get home later. You don't have the neighborhood community involvement with those schools like it will be happening in other areas. And I think it's critical that we keep our schools in our community. There's an incentive for somebody to leave. If you're giving away money, why not take that money, if we have low-performing schools, and invest in the schools where we need more help? That would make better sense to me.
And she's referring there to the impact that vouchers are having. We also heard about that from Ben Reichert.
Born and raised Tallahassee, a product of public schools. Well, if enrollment's down, there's not going to be enough funding to be able to pay the teachers. So that's a product of, it's an unfortunate result of I guess, the current times we're in. But I know a little bit about the voucher program. My kids are too young to be in schools just yet. But it's understandable that somebody at an underperforming school would want to go somewhere where teachers can invest in them.
So you can imagine that the state's largest teachers union is reacting very angrily to the possibility of having to close traditional public schools because of the Choice Voucher Program. Florida Education Association President Andrew Spahr recently gave WFSU's Tristan Wood an earful about this.
Anytime we're closing neighborhood schools, we're hurting the neighborhood. And it's not lost on me that the majority of schools that get brought up for closure are schools that serve some of our most disadvantaged communities, our poor students, students who are African American or Hispanic. Those are the schools that often get closed, which leaves communities without a very, very important part of that community. Schools are the center of every community in this state. So school closures are bad for students. And they're bad for the community. And then when we talk about this diversion of over $4 billion now annually coming out of public school budgets to voucher programs, the question has to be asked is, where is that money going and what's the accountability attached with that money? Because those questions can't be answered right now. Last year, the Department of Education could not figure out where 23,000 students were. And those students were all in the public schools, but they were also being claimed by the voucher company. And the voucher company was saying that those kids were either being homeschooled or were in a private school when they weren't. And those dollars never made it to the public schools. And in fact, public schools are still waiting on those dollars to come from the Department of Education because those were dollars that should have gone to the students in our public schools. Not to mention the fact that we have seen over and over and over again the questionable use of taxpayer money through these voucher programs, where you have families that have gone to Disney World and booked it as an education expense and gotten taxpayer money for a week-long vacation at Disney World, where you've seen and heard stories of families that have bought furniture for their house or did some remodeling in their house, calling them educational needs for students they are homeschooling. So when you hear about those kinds of things, we should all be questioning what's going on with taxpayer money that's being drained out of our public schools, causing public schools to potentially close schools and make cuts. And then these dollars are being handed out without any assurance that it's actually being used for the benefit of the education of students in the state of Florida.
That was Andrew Spahr, who leads the Florida Education Association, the state's largest teachers union. I talked to Florida State University's Patrice Iatarola about the impact of school closures on students and on communities. She's an associate professor of education policy and evaluation at FSU.
I've seen school closures of my own elementary school, of my cousin's elementary school that was ultimately raised for new housing. Closing schools, it feels like there's a spiritual dead space around it. And I think we can think of ways in which this challenge presents an opportunity for us to enliven, invigorate communities, whether through the school that they may have been in or through their new school, some way of just engaging that and taking this as an opportunity.
What is typically the cause of school closures?
Well, I mean, I think historically it's been demographic changes, you know, the aging of a neighborhood perhaps. But I think over time there's lots of different forces that are going on. In particular now it's, you know, kind of there's the landscape of school choice, whether it's charter schools or whether it's state-funded vouchers. And I know that some people have also mentioned kind of immigration as well and changes in that in terms of families willing to put their kids in public schools and things like that. So it's a different landscape, I would say, than historically has been driven primarily by demographic changes.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's not just about funding or lower enrollment, and we have seen demographic changes in Leon result in school closures previously. What is the impact that we tend to see when a school is closed. How does this impact kids or the community?
Well, you could think about it in a few different ways. You could think about it in terms of kids, in terms of their academic outcomes and their socialization into new settings. And the research is mixed on that. There's times where if their new school is going to be a higher performing school, there tends to be a more positive impact on academic outcomes. But if it's a school that is low performing, perhaps similar to where they're coming from, it could be a negative impact. It may increase student absenteeism, especially when you're starting to deal with some of the transportation issues that they might have to face going to a new school outside of their neighborhood. In terms of community, there's a few different impacts. One is thinking about the social cohesion or the social engagement that a school or a public institution might bring to a community. And so if that school closes, then that engagement might not be happening in the ways that it traditionally has happened. Interestingly enough, and this is based on urban school closings, is that actually crime can decrease when a school is closed to the extent that there are gangs operating in neighborhoods, and it might increase in areas where the kids are being sent to. But this is a different landscape in many respects. The other thing is that it also may have economic impacts to the extent that some of the local economies, whether it's small stores, et cetera, that their income is in part driven by kids in communities and parents taking their kids to school, maybe stopping at the store, et cetera.
Yeah.
And that no longer is there.
Yeah, interesting. What kind of recovery strategies could help these students or a community in a school closure situation?
I think one of the key things is, perhaps this isn't so much about recovery, but it's about the planning stages of transitioning, whether it's consolidating and closing schools, is to somehow engage the community in the discussion and have them understand what's happening, perhaps even timeline-wise. And I think the transparency of what are the factors that are shaping these decisions would be very helpful. So I think it's more about kind of my sense is that as much as we could do beforehand would be helpful. In terms of recovery, I think that that's ultimately a challenge. But it's not only just the schools that are closing or that may be consolidating and you're moving kids from one school to another. It's also about the receiving school. And, you know, preparing them that you're going to be having these kids and they may or may not look different, perform different, look different culturally, racially than the students that are already there. And how do you as a school be sensitive to different needs of kids who are coming into that community and also the kids that you already have in the community school?
Yeah. You hit on this, but do school closures widen educational inequalities or maybe ultimately help them?
I think that's hard to say. My take on the research, again, is focused primarily on the impacts on student achievement, and it's a mixed bag there. It really depends on, you know, the strength of the school that these kids might be going to, where they're coming from. I think there's definitely a disparate impact on which schools are closing and which communities are taking the hit, so to speak, in terms of their school closing. It's usually the most vulnerable communities, low-income communities, communities with, you know, of color. And so it's really, I think it's that. I don't know so much in terms of the ultimate long-run outcomes. Mm-hmm. On the achievement side, from my read of the research, it seems to kind of over time even out. Again, I feel, though, that in this current day, we're in such a different landscape than what even we might have known from evidence of school closing 10 years ago.
Yeah. You were talking about how it's important in the planning stage to get this right. Where do communities get this wrong when schools are closed and suddenly students are being sent to various other locations?
Well, I think it's not so much that they get something wrong. I think the challenges are significant from the community side. Your child is no longer going to a school, especially when we're talking about elementary schools, a little bit different for middle schools and definitely different for high schools, but for an elementary school, that you might have been able to walk your child to school, or you might be picking your child up from school and walking home and having, so there's a different experience that you might have. And now if your child is going to a school further away, do you have the time? Do you have the transportation to go meet your child in the same way? Do you have the opportunity to engage your new school in ways that you might have been able to engage your current school?
Yeah. So we know that school closures are on the table as a possibility here in Leon. We know this is also true around the state because of low enrollment and reduced funding. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you think we should mention?
Well, I think there's a few things that we often frame it as, what are the cost savings? Because it's really kind of the financial side that's putting pressure on the system to close or consolidate schools. And so we always think, well, there's all this savings if we close schools. But there's costs associated with consolidation. Increased transportation costs, and that's not insignificant. There's also potentially, do you have the capacity of the schools? What might be some capital or infrastructure changes that might need to happen in the receiving schools? So it's not, you know, you just close the school. So I haven't heard that. I haven't heard anything about the potential cost of consolidation financially. I haven't heard any ideas around innovating in terms of potentially using space in ways, perhaps not even closing schools or not consolidating, but using space in a way that is new. Maybe learning pods for homeschoolers. Some kind of creative way of thinking about what is the role of this physical space and this school community, with quotes around that, that we could think more creatively about.
That was FSU Associate Professor of Education Policy and Evaluation Patrice Iaturola. Lynn, we need to be clear that nothing official has been decided yet in Leon, but school board members are trying to figure out how to deal with lower enrollment and less funding.
School closures are being discussed as a potential option, and this is also happening as Leon County teachers are still fighting for a raise that's larger than $40 a month. So this is something that is going to be ongoing and is very much going to impact, I think, the character of this county.
Yeah, no question. Well, we'll be watching and we'll keep reporting on all of this. Lynn, thanks for helping explain all of it.
Anytime, G. I miss y'all.